Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, band.video, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate your support. You can share this show with your friends and family. You can rate the show if you feel that we've earned a five-star rating. We'll take it. You can connect with me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter, at macroaggression. This is normally the time where I do an ad read. And I talk to you about Legal Shield, or I talk to you about Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. But considering I have the man that brought me both of these sponsors, I figure we'll just jump right into it. We'll just have a little bit of a chat about how this came to be. Of course, I'm speaking of my good friend, Tony Ardeburn. Tony, it's good to see you. How are you?
It's good to see you, my friend. Surprisingly, I wasn't given an invitation to the World Economic Forum gathering in Davos. Can you believe that?
It must have been you. I blame the post office, frankly.
I was lost in the mail.
I blame the post office. I didn't do a proper introduction for you. You are the owner of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. You are the host of the Ardeburn Radio Transmission Radio Show. You're David Knight's fill-in host when he goes on vacation, and the co-host of America Unplugged with the great Billy Ray Valentine and Don Jeffries, who we love so much, the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show, and the Paratruther Show. My God, Billy Ray Valentine calls me the hardest working man in the alternative media. I think you are.
Well, you set the standard. I was just trying. Look, I haven't even done any new shows in a while, except for my radio show. And of course, we do America Unplugged every Saturday. But yeah, you start reading off that resume. And yeah, this I can't be Charlie Robinson, but I'm trying.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what. I appreciate you. You turned me on to, obviously, Wise Wolf, your gold and silver store. And it was... It was something I really wanted. I wanted to have a connection to a company that I trusted that provided gold and silver specifically, because I think those are really good options. And though I'm not licensed to give investment advice, I do think it's just kind of a reasonable, logical, sensible thing to convert, just change the form of, you know, whatever you're holding a portion of your wealth in. It's Federal Reserve notes right now, and they've been, you know, inflated away over the last 100 years, but I guess I would say relatively stable as compared to, say, Venezuela or someplace like that. But still, you know, you could just convert that in. You can just change that into silver and gold and hold on to that just in case. And I always thought that was a smart thing to do. I have gold and silver myself. Never enough. I want more. And so I'm glad that you came into my universe because you provide solutions to that. So can we just real quick, since I've got you here, can you explain what the Wolfpack membership is? I I obviously know what it is because I'm a member, and I get like once a month, a little fairy brings me a box, and in that box, it's filled with silver. And I really like that because I don't have to think about it. It just sort of shows up on an automated schedule. So I think this is a genius idea. Obviously, you know it's a genius idea because you came up with it and it's blowing up so much so that you had to like reconfigure everything. So could you just explain to people what the Wolfpack concept is?
Well, sure. And first of all, it's an honor to sponsor your program. I find it hard to believe sometimes. I listen to Flashback Fridays and you plug me and I realize that's me he's talking about.
Yeah.
Wise Wolf. I started Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange really because I'd, you know, taken on so much history and learned about coins and the monetary system and was interested in buying gold even since I was in my early 20s. And the first time I ever bought gold from someone, I called one of those 1-800 numbers that advertise on talk radio. And you could feel the guy being so disappointed when he realized I only had like $3,000. Mm-hmm. And he was just like, oh, and then just put me in some numismatic coin. And I tried to, you know, sell it years later. I didn't even get my money out of it. And I realized something. It's in the gold and silver business, it's kind of a guessing game. Like if you really don't know what you're doing, and the person on the other side of the counter usually knows that, and they're going to see how much you know. So I decided when I founded Wise Wolf, we don't have a minimum. I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to be disappointed that you want $100 in silver because I've been that guy. I've been completely broke. I understand that. You know, that's what happens to entrepreneurs. If something, we're not propped up by the central banks. We don't walk between the raindrops like Klaus Schwab or something. You know, so when something happens to us, when we start a business, we go broke. We have to kiss the pig is what my dad used to say in the old Texas saying about going broke. So I understand that. So we come out of a place of being humbled by that and wanting to bring a good product to people, especially in these times when you're seeing a great devaluation or revaluation of all currencies. And one of the ideas that came out of this last few years is Wolfpack. Now, you called it a genius idea. It's funny. I didn't think of it in the way that it's growing. I only thought of it like, well, you know, I'm buying all this product every day, and it could be a little bit at a time. From people like from the public, like somebody will come in and sell me 100 ounces of silver. And I thought, you know, I ought to have a club where you could just, you know, you, because there are some people that write me checks and say, Tony, just buy stuff for me over the month, right. But they wouldn't be consistent. So I thought, well, what if I had a club where people would just, you know, sign up for a monthly membership, I'll send them an invoice at the end of the month, and maybe I'll get, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 people. Well, that's not what happened. I came up with a really good marketing plan, I believe. You know, you use the wolf avatar, but you create the wolf pack. And so the tagline is, in a world of bulls and bears, be the wolf. And again, you talk about, I don't give investment advice, but everybody knows what that means. And if you're, you know, trying to gauge what's happening to the stock market or what's going to happen to the fiat controlled markets, it's hard to know what's happening. But in gold and silver, it's pretty consistent. You know, gold and silver are money. They've always been money. They always will be. They have a store of value. So you know what's going on there. And Wolfpack is, again, it's one of those ideas that became organic. It kind of took on a life of its own. So my thing was, look, $50 a month to start. If you want to join the Lone Wolf package, it's $50. Now that $50 is not, you're not paying me to just be a part of this group. You're getting $50 worth of silver, you know, minus your shipping, minus credit card fees. We send you an invoice and say, hey, look, you got a, like, I think last month was a silver round. You know, 1 ounce of silver. And then we had some brilliant uncirculated silver dimes that I bought, which is pretty rare. I mean, it's hard to even find like dimes that were never put into circulation. Like they stayed in the bank vault. So what we do is we show you an invoice and say, okay, we got you $50 in silver. And then here's what you would have paid if you'd have gone to a big trading house, right? We can usually save you money. It's not guaranteed. But the thing about Wolfpack that I didn't realize, Charlie, and now that we're, you know, 300 members plus and growing, is that the more people that join, the better deals that I can get for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it goes up. I added Sage Wolf about a week ago, and that's where I'm capping. It's the $1,000 a month plan. So you have Lone Wolf at 50, Warrior Wolf at 125, Alpha at 250, Wise Wolf at 500, and then it doubles again in the Sage Wolf. And well, Sage Wolf one I came up with, I said, what can I do? Well, you can have my personal cell phone number. You're also going to get deals on, and special buying privileges and things like that. So I set that up for the people that look like, hey, I'm going to be buying a lot of metals this year. you probably ought to look into Sage Wolf because it'll save you money. But each one of the levels is an invoice. It's the metals for your money. It's not, this is going to be like, you're going to learn information. Well, all my stuff's public. I'm making all my podcasts. I mean, you don't have to pay for that. There's no premium. So Wolfpack is really the answer, in my opinion, after I've begun to understand it, once I put it in motion, is the answer to the central bank digital currency, because it's a collective. We're all coming together to increase our buying power in the metals business and in that sector. And I'm going to add a chat for members. Like, you have to be a member to get, I'm working on that right now with my web people, so we can all connect. So it's really about community. And I'm really excited about it. I mean, again, it's growing. I've had to hire people now to fill the orders. In fact, I didn't intend this, but it, as it's taken off, I'm more and more excited about it. I think it's long-term going to be a great project, and I really appreciate all of your listeners who've
I can't recommend it highly enough. But I also do this. I had Hotep Jesus on. He was one of he was on the board of Coinbit app, and that's like an automatic dollar cost averaging purchase every week of Bitcoin. I've got that going. I've got the Wise Wolf or the Wolfpack going, where I'm getting a shipment. I'm getting a box every month in the mail of silver. And I'm just putting it away. You know, I'm not saying, oh, I'm buying this silver because I'm buying it at 25 and I'm thinking it's going to go to 2,500. Look, at some point, I hope it does. Actually, I hope it doesn't for a while so I can get more of it. Sure. And really, more than anything, I'm not trying to make money on it. I'm trying to limit my downside risk for holding fiat currency. I'm trying to get myself something, an asset that I think, gold and silver has value for a variety of reasons. It's obviously, I'm not telling you something you don't know, but for those that just think it magically appears, it has to be pulled out of the ground. It has to be refined. It has to be minted and pressed and shipped, and all these things cost money. So it has value just in and of itself being gold and silver, but it also has valued in terms of, you know, this stuff isn't free. It costs money to pull it out of the ground. And so I love the idea of having this. I read this thing. So we're going to talk about the fourth turning here. And it takes me back to, like, I read something where they were talking about a gold coin in the Roman days would get you a new toga. You know, I mean, I don't know, like a new suit, a new pair of sandals, you know, all of the Roman gear and everything. And they said today, in today's, you know, America, a gold coin will get you a new suit, a new pair of shoes, a new shirt, a new tie, you know. So it's like kind of retained its value. And I was like, oh, interesting. I thought that was wild. We may be going back to togas and sandals when this whole thing is over. So look, obviously we set it up through a website, through us. www.macroaggressions.gold is a good place. But if people are curious to just, if they just have gold and silver related questions, what's the best way for them to get their questions answered? Or if they have questions about a membership, reaching out to you,
you know, macroaggressions.gold. And if you want to learn about Wolfpack, there's a tab on there that says join Wolfpack. That'll take you direct to the landing page we have. And when you're signing up, you can just give credit to Charlie. We have all of the hosts that we sponsor, like David Knight.
That's right.
Is on there, and Sam Tripoli is on there as well. So yeah, you can just give credit to Charlie when you join the Wolfpack. But if you want to learn more about gold and silver purchase, even going direct, not having to join the monthly deal, you just go to macroaggressions.gold. Best way to do it.
And you also brought me Legal Shield, and I really appreciate that. Well, I feel simultaneously thrilled that you brought it to me, and kind of stupid that I didn't know about it for a long, you know, I didn't know about it until recently. But you'd been with them for 20 years?
Yes. My grandfather, Jack Gamble, brought me into that business right before I went to Iraq. So I was 22. So it's been 21 years. He brought me into the business, and I've never look back. I mean, it's been great. There's been times when I've been active that, like, that's all I did for a living. Matter of fact, the desk that I'm sitting at now was Jack's desk, and it still has all of his Legal Shield goals and logins and all this. I left them intact because that was his business up until the day he passed away. And anyway, so it's been kind of a family business for me. They're such a great company. When he died, I'll give you an example. when he died, they normally, their protocol is if somebody dies that has a business in a book of business, and it's very much like insurance, you can keep that book of business, you can keep all the people you ever signed up, but it stops, like you can't rebuild it anymore. They actually assigned me his number and let me continue to grow it after 2005.
Nice.
So that's the kind of company that they are. Good people. I know that you talked to Larry Smith over there. And look, the thing is, what Legal Shield does, and I love that you don't get pushed around.com. That's a great URL because that's really what it's all about.
In my head, the lawyers can be used for a bunch of things, but in my mind, it was, I'm getting pushed around by some homeowners association or a jewelry store that said they were going to do this when I bought the product and they didn't do whatever it is. You know, I envision a situation where the company that you're dealing with is being unreasonable and they're going, well, just sue me then, dummy. And you go, I can't, I don't have that. And then you think, I'm just getting pushed around because I don't have access to this stuff. And I thought, well, that'd be a good domain name for us, because I envision people having access to a lawyer and then feeling like they're finally not going to get pushed around. Not that they're going to use this and go on the offense and start suing everybody. You know,
that's not really what it's designed for. I mean, it's a shield for a reason. It's a shield around you and your family.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. Like I had a run-in with a towing company. One time my truck got towed and put into this impound. Like, I guess I'd parked it wrong. Whatever happened, I can't remember. It was back in the 2006-07 range. And it was like they charged me to get it out, and they shouldn't have. I mean, it was like an extra $40 or something. They charged me a late fee. I didn't want to pay that $40. They kept invoicing me for it. So I just had the law firm send them a letter, and they got a letterhead with Ross and Matthews, the law firm in Texas. They get it certified. I mean, you can just pay the extra $10, have them certify it. And I didn't have to pay the $40. They released it. And that's what I've used it for. You know, I'm just, and again, you get with Legal Shield, it's less than a cup of coffee a day for cost, but you get unlimited access.
Yeah.
And it was Harlan Stonecipher, the guy that invented it. You talk about genius. He was in a car accident. And of course, you know, I had all the medical bills. He had medical insurance. All this stuff was accident insurance. He had everything covered. But the person he was in a wreck with sued him, and he had to come out of pocket to protect himself. And he realized, well, I'm in this situation because I can't get legal insurance. We have everything else. So he started what was then called prepaid legal, and it turned into Legal Shield. So really, it's just you. It's not only like, you know, if you get life insurance, you don't really ever want to have to use it,
right?
You know, or medical insurance either. But the cool thing about Legal Shield, it's unlimited. So like if you get the membership, and if all 50 states in Canada, you can pick up the phone anytime and talk to an attorney, and they have real estate attorneys, you know, they have criminal attorneys. You can talk to bankruptcy attorneys. It's unlimited. You can start a case number and call in as many times as you like. The same thing with document review. You get that. It protects you. One of the reasons I thought, and I don't know why I hadn't brought it up sooner. I used to be an executive director with them. There's times that that's what I did for a living was Legal Shield. And I thought, why the IRS stuff? Like, it's built into your membership. It's protecting you from the IRS audits. And again, the hours that you get in court time, like if you just, like I've been a member for 20 plus years. So after 5 years, I think you have like 300 or 400 hours of court time, like just built in. It's like if anybody ever sues you, so that a lot of times they stop the lawsuits. So like if you're sued by something, your attorney from whatever state you're in will just send them a letter and go, my client has, you know, X amount of hours before they even write a check. And you got to remember how many hours of court time that is. I think that like 400 hours is like more time than like the OJ trial. So it's it's a lot of hours that you get built into it. So again, less than a cup of coffee a day on price. And I mean, you get your will done, you get a document review. I got a ticket the other day. I got to send that into the law firm. They always find a way where you can, you know, negotiate that, or, you know, pay for it in the right way, or, you know, whatever your plea is going to be, you know. And I think I got something for registration. I'm always going from different states, Charlie. I'm kind of a vagabond in that way. So I got in trouble for that. But so that's a Legal Shield issue. And, you know, in these times, like I'll give you one more example why I think it's cool is I carry it in my wallet. They send you a card with your membership, and on the back, it has a 1-800 number that you would call 24/7, 365. I don't care if it's Christmas Eve and it's 1 a.m. you can pick up the phone and they have an attorney on standby. So if you're stopped by a police officer and let's say somebody stole your identity, because that's what we do here in this country. We reward illegal immigration by, you know, again, not deporting people, not arresting those who pay them. You have people like in South Texas that will have flea markets. Well, they'll just have stacks of people's social security numbers for sale. Jeez. And their information at flea markets. So you can become someone else. You know, you can get their either wages through W-2 or whatever. And again, not pay taxes on 1099s. You can use it for criminal means. And again, people, you can get stopped and all of a sudden somebody stole your identity. You start getting arrested. Well, you can pick up this card. You can give it to the officer and say, I'm calling my attorney. And you can call an attorney right then. They're going to, again, a lot of times they'll say, put me on the line with the officer. You hear these stories all the time.
Yeah.
So it's just something to have in your back pocket, something for peace of mind. It's not expensive and it's something you can use. It's not like, oh, well, you know, again, like another type of insurance that's right. Something you can only use if it's the catastrophic. No, it's just an everyday thing. And in these times, it's just another way that we can even the playing field. So that's yeah. I'm glad that you picked up on that. It's good for your audience.
I'm glad you put me in touch with this, because I think, you know, there's a couple themes of this show. One is obviously we're talking about crazy things that are happening out in the world and making light of it. But another is, you know, look, because we see this insanity out there on the horizon and we know that we're sprinting towards it. Well, let's be proactive. Let's make some moves now, as opposed to after it's too late, you know, when you can't do what you need to do. So that's why I like that, you know, you have a heart, you know, gold and silver option, and also crypto too. If people are interested in crypto, they can get it through. You have, you know, the ability to convert people's 401ks into precious metals. That's a pretty good option to have. Then you brought me Legal Shield, which gives people access for like $1 a day to attorneys for all the things that you just mentioned. And I'm sure a bunch of other things that people haven't even thought. I mean, it just seems like we're putting on our armor to battle what's coming our way. And so I appreciate you doing that. And that's why I wanted to kind of have this conversation, since we could take, instead of like doing an ad read, we could just have a more of a practical discussion about why these things are important. I'm never going to be reading an ad read for McDonald's or maybe Chuck E. Cheese, because it's funny and the OBDM guys talk about that. But that would only be to get you admission so you could see the fights happening in the ball pit for free. But I try to make these sponsorships logical and fitting and come from companies that I trust and that we know. So anyway, thank you for being a part of this in the ways that you are. But I really want to talk to you about where we're headed, because I, you know what, listen, I started thinking about this and it occurred to me, you might be the most interesting person that I know. I'm being 100% serious here. Your background is crazy. The things that you have done, the things that you continue to do. And you've been on before and we've talked a bunch, but again, just for those that are sort of new, because the show's growing and we're getting new people all the time. It doesn't have to be like a full, it's not a job interview, obviously. It was just like, what were you doing in the military? I want to know about the powerlifting. I want to know about the companies you've started. I want to know about the radio show. I mean, can we just do that real quick so people know where you're coming from? Because when I want to talk to somebody about history and history repeating itself, you're the person that I'm going to talk to about it because of your insane knowledge of this history and being through multiple theaters of war and seeing what happens and seeing the reality of this. I'm just some armchair quarterback who's never been on a battlefield and only know what I know in books or in movies. You've been there. So please just tell people who you are and why your opinion on this is so unbelievably needed in these crazy times.
Well, again, thank you. I mean, for that introduction, it's humbling. I mean, you talk about, I've always wanted to be interesting. You know, that's the thing is
interesting.
Try not to be boring. Always for sure. bold moves to shake up the matrix. You know, there's been times in my life when I'm like, I'm just in a rut. And I'm like, what's the, you know, within reason, what's the craziest thing that I can do, you know, to shake it up? So I always strive to do that. And I come from a town just east of Dallas called Rockwall in Texas. And that, again, if anybody knows, that's the hometown of Alex Jones. He's just a little bit older than I. We went to the same schools back in the 80s and 90s. But I was a part of the powerlifting team. I won state championship and then went on to win world titles even before I joined the military. And I joined the military in 1999, went to Fort Leonard Wood for basic training. And then I went to Fort Bragg, which is home of the Airborne, Special Ops, Delta Force, all that. And right when I got there, I volunteered for my first deploy. The first day, I volunteered to go to Kosovo, which was Mr. Clinton's war. We bombed Serbia for 78 days. And I didn't know that then. I just knew there was a deployment. I just got out of airborne school. I wanted to go. And the colonel there, Colonel Bradley, which was a great man. I ended up working for him later. He saw me do that and he said, I want to know more about this guy. And because he looked at my name tag, he goes, Afterburn. That's an interesting name. Of course, it's Arterburn, but that's the way he read it. A lot of right. people, of course, you're never going to talk back to the colonel. So anyway, we went to Kosovo and I did that tour. And by the time I was coming back, he said, look, we looked through your records. You got these world titles in powerlifting. Why don't you just go lift? You did your tour. You volunteered to just go lift. So I went and just started going to meets and got another state title, a couple state titles in different states. And I got on the U.S. team. I won the national championships. And they put me on the U.S. team to go to Sofia, Bulgaria to represent the United States in the World Championships. And I got there on September 10th, 2001 as an active duty military member. So the next day, it was really eerie. My dad went with me and we were watching Fight Club. And because it was one of my favorite movies, you know, I picked up a DVD in the airport. It's like, yeah, you got to watch this movie. There's a whole bunch of philosophy. And I was 21. You know, and what did I know? But I was like, it's really cool. You got to check it out. He's, you know, it's not what you think it is. Anyway, so we literally tried. This is a true story. Do you know at the end of the movie on Fight Club, he does the controlled demolition and the two buildings fall. He says, this is it. This is ground zero, you know? And we turned on the television on CNN International right after that. And then the first plane had struck the tower. And we were looking at that and kind of just trying to figure out what had happened. And then the second plane hit. And remember, my dad just looked at me and says, we're at war. And I said, yes, I know. And I called back to Fort Bragg and my unit that I was with, because I was at headquarters, had already deployed to the Pentagon. They'd already gone. Like they had their orders. They were ready to go. Like it was like the next day. So I got through. It was a weird meet. Like, you know, you had all these international teams and my meet didn't go well, obviously. And that's a whole other story, but I was there to break the world record. And it could have been for political reasons or whatever it was. Like I was opening up with like 515 pounds on bench press. And at Jeez. The time that was and then the Russians held it at like 530 some odd at the time. And I thought I can break that. I mean, in training, I got real close to that and felt good. That was the best shape I was ever going to be in because when I got back to Fort Bragg, they had me slotted to be the first company on the ground in Afghanistan. So literally, we were the first Army company, it's 108th MP Company, which was Airborne Air Assault out of Fort Bragg. And I got there just after my birthday in December of 2001 in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and learned a lot, to say the least. That was really the beginning of my education. And of course, the back-to-back, I went to the tail end of the invasion of Iraq. And a lot of the books, if you're watching the video, a lot of these books were with me. I ordered just stacks and stacks of stuff. I read about 200 books, and I'm not kidding. Like, you can go back. Anybody I served with knows I had stacks of stuff around me because that's how there was no TV. There's no radio. There's no nothing. I mean, we didn't have electricity most of the time. We took over an old Republican Guard barracks in Iraq. And that's really my hatred for that war. Like, just leading into it, I go, what are we doing? Because we were seeing real intelligence in Afghanistan. Or whatever that means, the oxymoron of military intelligence together. But we were seeing like, and I said, this has nothing to do with Iraq. What are they doing? We kept sending resources over to Kuwait for the buildup. And I just go, this is a blunder. This is a mistake. I mean, I was a really angry young, now I wasn't going to not do it. I mean, I had a team to take care of. So I did my job. But Iraq really affected me in a way. That was my education, there on the Tigris River. the ancient city of Nineveh. If you know anything about the Bible, where, you know, Jonah is asked by God to go to Nineveh and preach, and he keeps running away, and they finally get swallowed up by a great fish. You know, that's that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wrote my grandmother, I go, I see why Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh now. I really get it. I really get why. But yeah, that was my education. And I just did a talk recently at the Young Republicans in Rockwall. They asked me to come speak because I used to be a Republican and somewhat. I mean, I've always been an outsider.
Right.
But I did run for Congress once. And I was talking about the book that really changed my life, that got me started. And I guess this will kind of be a segue into the fourth turning, was Pat Buchanan's The Death of the West. And it was reading about dying populations and the real politics of civilization, not this stuff that they throw on the mainstream, or not the left-right paradigm of false, you know, the WWE, you know, stage stuff. Like, what is actually happening? Like birth rates, you know, migrations of peoples, language, cultural Marxism. Like, what is actually going on? Like, eating away at tradition and history and heroes and things. So that's what got, because my education, it was all pretty much self. And I studied at the University of Dallas after my military career. I studied philosophy for a couple of years while I was trying to run a real estate business. Not very conducive. I'm there with a bunch of kids, and that's a great school. I wasn't meant for college at that time, or any time, I don't think. So anyway, that's, you know, that led me to having a different view of history. You know, really seeking out, that's, again, that was the beginnings of what would eventually be my radio broadcasting and alternative media career, if you want to call it that, was just knowledge. I mean, I've said this before on your show, is getting here through research. Like, I didn't get here because I have a feeling. I got here because I wanted to know. Like, you know, when you wrote The Octopus of Global Control, by the way, that's a great book. Whenever I want to, like, center myself to, you know, what am I doing here? I'll go back and read some excerpts of that book. I really do. I have it here at the shop. I have it in print. I have it on my Kindle. That's a great book.
And so I appreciate Demolition.
But yeah, that's, again, we're here. We got here through research. And again, you know, you are your experiences in many ways. You're the people that you meet, the hands you shake, the books you read. So I'm a product of that. You know, the term alma mater means nourishing mother of studies. And I was giving that talk the other day. I said, well, if that's the case, then I guess war and books. You know, I'm a paratrooper who likes books. And I ended up being fortunate enough to survive those wars of choice. And I speak out on that. I don't speak out against the warrior class. I mean, I don't think it's their fault that we have psychopaths and lizard people who do this Luciferian rituals with our foreign policy. And I'm not afraid to say that. I think a lot of it is a ritual. But, you know, again, we get here through research. And history, it's interesting. I get goosebumps when I think about it sometimes, you know, about the business that I'm in with gold and silver and precious metals, how I got here, you know, all the things that had to happen for me to do that. And then we're on the cusp of this massive shift, unlike anything we've seen in our American history, for sure, but perhaps even the world, because we've never had, Charlie, everything that I do, you know, if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So when I'm talking about metals or precious metals and currency, it all leads back to fiat. You know, fiat is fake. It's the head of the snake. Like all the problems that we have politically, socially, economically, you know, geopolitically, all that, it all goes back to having fake money. And they've created, every country around the globe has a floating currency. Every one of them. That's never happened before. We've always had places to run to in different currencies to get into. That's what's happening, I think, with the BRICS nations, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. And by the way, we'll talk about this in this episode, I'm sure, but Saudi Arabia is hinting that they're going to get away from the dollar and go to the petro yuan. I mean, you talk about mega shifts in what we perceive as our political, geopolitical reality. It's happening.
Yeah.
And it's happening faster than I want it to. I don't wish these things.
No.
But you can see it. And again, I just think the normalcy bias, and this is one of the reasons I talk to my audience all the time. I mean, all these threats coming down with the Great Reset, the central bank digital currencies, the surveillance state, the Google smart cities, whatever. I mean, it just keeps coming. It's normalcy bias is going to get us in trouble. It doesn't mean that it's the end. It doesn't mean that it's all, you know, darkness and we're not going to be able to resist this, but just knowing, I think, is going to help people prepare for the impacts of these terrible psychopathic decisions that are being made right now. So if you want to take that and we'll go into the fourth turning, we certainly can. I hope that was an overview of the Bible.
Well, and I think it's important for people to hear about your past, because then they understand where you're coming from. And this is, you're somebody that's been through war, therefore you know how awful it can be. You understand history, so you know where unchecked power goes. You understand that these things are cyclical. And that's really what takes us to this. In 2009, a book came out called The Fourth Turning. And it's on my list to read, and I know a little bit about it, but not enough. And I definitely want to read the book. And much like you, I have a big stack of books right now, and I'm just trying to work my way through them. And this one's on my list, but I thought I'm not going to wait until I have time to read it, because I know that you've been talking about this, and Berwick and I, of course, we write a book called The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and we're talking about how these empires follow pretty predictable cycle patterns. You know, there's eight different moves in this full circle, and it's undeniable that we're at the eighth part of this. You know, we're just about, and at the very end where the things fall off the cliff. And much like you, I don't want this to happen. I'm not trying to manifest this. I'm just talking about the things I observe from current events. And understanding of history to the extent that I can understand it, and a knowledge base that of watching markets over the years, and understanding it doesn't go up forever. Sometimes it goes down. Sometimes things get bad, and it feels like we're walking into this. So, and of course, when I hear the fourth turning and I hear the fourth industrial revolution, things in my head start going, okay, well, we're at the fourth something, and I don't know if either one of these is going to be any good. So what's the fourth turning, and why are we on a collision course with it?
Well, I mean, if it was Jim Mars, he'd tell you it's the Fourth Reich. I think they're all right. But, you talk about that book. It was written by two historians called Strauss and Howe, and is actually written in 1995. Looking at an updated version of 2000.
I saw the updated version. I guess I didn't see the 95.
So they, in 95, one of the last sane years of our civilization. But you go back to 95, they predicted a lot of what transpired in the last 25 years. And so they thought that the fourth turning would begin sometime around 2005, beginning with financial instability and again, leading into a big shakeup of society. And to understand what a fourth turning is, you have to look at history through cycles. The Romans called it a seclorum. So about every 80 to 100 years, you have a shift in society, a great upheaval, a big change. I'll give you an example. So 80 years ago from now would be World War II. Right. 80 years from World War II would have been the Civil War. 80 years from the Civil War would have been the American Revolution, if you're starting to get the pattern here.
Yeah.
That's why if you go and look at the speech, the Gettysburg Address, Abraham Lincoln says 87 years ago, that's 87 years. He's talking about, the previous generation's big challenge. And so this cyclical part of history, the reason they call it a fourth turning is because every 20 years, there's another turning. So you start with the last turning would have began really with what you would call the greatest generation. You know, that's coming out of the baby, ending with the culminating in the baby boomers. But the greatest generation coming back from the war, that begins a first turning. Yeah, after the cataclysm and everything ends of World War II, the atomic bomb, Bretton Woods in 1944, new economic world order, all that stuff. You know, Japan in ashes, Europe destroyed and occupied. That begins a new turning after that cataclysm is over. So each turning is about 20 years. So it's interesting. I was thinking, I'm like, well, World War I was a third turning. I mean, that was pretty bad.
Yeah.
So it's like World War I was a third turning. So that's crazy to think about it that way. So you had, you know, again, and they term the Strauss and Howe, they coined the term millennial. That's where they you get that from Strauss and Howe. So really, if you follow history that way, that there's cycles, and it kind of ties back to what Friedrich Hegel talked about in the 19th century with the Hegelian dialectic, which, you know, he believed that history was presenting a thesis, it would be met with antithesis, and they'd fight it out to create synthesis. And we know now from research that the elites understood that, and they, to get to, you know, the problem reaction solution, to get to that solution, they would present the different thesis and antithesis and make it look like it's real, but really they just want to get to socialism, right? And to get to the top-down control, that's where you get the modern day mega state and welfare state that was kind of fused with communism. So not to get too off in the weeds, but, you know, I think about it like this. If we know this, that the cyclical part of history, if we understand this, then the elites certainly do.
Yeah.
And they have their think tanks going over it, you know, day in, day out, trying to war game it. And I'm wondering, Charlie, something I think about often. I think about 9/11 as an artificial bend in the river of time. Like if they wanted to create another reality, if that was their attempt to, because again, if you go back to the 1970s, early 70s, the world knew that the United States was going broke. We printed more, we created more currency than we could back up with gold. We broke in our agreement. It was, again, everybody knew this. De Gaulle was sending over from France, was sending over warships to pick up his gold. Nixon didn't have the gold. Everybody knew that. And you see the United States starts being slotted for deindustrialization. We're going to move the wealth. I mean, the Trilateral Commission comes out in 73. We'd open China in 72, went off the gold standard in 71. All these succession of events are happening. So I think people started to realize, like some of the elites started to realize, well, the United States is you know, going out, but it's not fast enough, or perhaps we can get something left out of it. So to me, that's what 9/11 perhaps was an artificial bend in the river of time. And I say that because, you know, we were told on, if you have any semblance of faith in the official narrative, you're told this is a battle of civilizations. It's good versus evil. And, you know, we got to stop the terrorists. You're with them or, you know, with us or you're with them. And the whole thing, see how that just gone?
Yeah.
So that's impossible. Like that they created this, you know, this Hydra is a multifaceted monster and it's going to get us and it's under your bed and it's everywhere. And if, you know, but it really wasn't. So it's interesting that entire thing got created. So what was the event that they wanted to try to stave off? And so I look at that and again, they may not have been successful because again, we were seven countries in 5 years. That's what that was all about, to get over and reshape, you know, the Middle East in a Wilsonian, democratize mankind, as George W. Bush would say.
Right.
And you look at, and again, just all the while, you know, 90 days, it might've been a misdirection to keep the American people occupied with a false enemy, a false challenge, while we're just spending trillions. Meanwhile, you know, 90 days to the day that 9/11 happened, the Bush administration got the Communist Chinese most favored nation status in trade with the WTO. It was on December 11th, which is, by the way, it was the anniversary when Hitler declared war. I don't know if anybody picked that up either. But the Chinese got the most favored nation trade status in 2001. And since that time, I mean, you've just seen a massive theft. I mean, call it what it is. It's economic treason, Charlie. It's really what it is. I mean, even the Bush administration, they had they tried to fudge the numbers on manufacturing by adding fast food jobs because people built sandwiches. I'm not kidding. Like, you can go back and look at that. Like, oh, they lost so many manufacturing jobs. It was so catastrophic that they had to literally go back and try to fudge the numbers so they wouldn't look as bad. But, you know, 1 in 3 manufacturing jobs gone under Bush, 55,000 factories shot. It was the last bit of deindustrialization, which is really the soul of a country. And if you can't make something, if you can't produce something, you became like what we were when we had the colonies. You know, you're just importing everything, which is, that's not strength. I mean, the founding fathers knew that. So again, I didn't want to get off too on the weeds there, but I think we know this, that that history goes in cycles. And really what the fourth turning is it's a culmination. And it's kind of like, you know, the first generation of that turning, like I said, would have been the greatest generation, people born in the 20s, people, you know, late 20s. And then ending now with, you know, people like us and Gen Xers. Again, it's so far removed from that society. You think how much has changed. And, you know, I think it has something to do too with, you know, with this timeline that we're on, Charlie. I think it's weird because, you know, what everything that America became stems from the NSC 68 document of 1947. You know, we're coming up on that anniversary here in 2027. And, you know, 1947, very interesting year. It's the year of Kenneth Arnold and the flying saucers over Mount Rainier. It's Roswell, on or around July 4th. You have that going on. It's, the year that, the Russians got the blueprints for the atomic bomb. There was all sorts of things going on, but they created the CIA. They created the Air Force, right? They created the NSA all through executive order of Harry Truman. Some people say Majestic 12, all of that stuff. I don't know that for sure. But there's definitely something baked into that as well, like the end of the 80-year cycle of the national security state, if that makes any sense. So it's,
yeah,
there's a lot. That's just stuff that I think about because, you know, if there's something to Hegel, there's something about, you know, the thesis and antithesis. I believe that, you know, because he wrote the book, The Philosophy of History. I don't know if you can get through that, give me a call. That's a tough book. Reading Hegel is really tough. But he had something there. And I think that we're experiencing that. And I think the elites know that. We may have these false timelines built in because of that. And we may not be, I don't think we're on a natural timeline at all. But I think that some things are baked into it. And I'll give you another example of history being strange and not trending towards what the elites want. The elites always want, I mean, they're just psychopaths. I mean, they just want to control everything. They're, like the new landed gentry, they just want us to be serfs and everything else. But that's not how history's going. I mean, you go back 250 years, it's the American Revolution. And 250 years before that, it's you know, the Protestant Reformation. Decentralization.
Yeah.
Breaking away. I mean, since the fall of the Soviet Union, you've had, you know, again, the phenomenon of ethno-nationalism. People want to go and be and create countries and communities where, again, you have common, doesn't have to be race, but a common language, history, heroes, tradition. That is what's going on. But the elites want one world religion, one government, yeah, one banking institution, one currency, all that stuff. It's not what history is flowing towards. So I think a lot of these things that we're experiencing, again, the disturbances in our timeline, I think are could be crude ways or maybe perhaps ingenious ways to redirect that.
You remember, you obviously were in Iraq, and we know that the history of Iraq is that, you know, you've got certain groups living there that don't get along with other groups living there. And then you go, why are these people fighting so much? And somebody said to me, well, the reason why they're fighting so much is whoever redrew the borders did so in a way that made it so that they were almost guaranteed to fight with each other. They put them all, you know, they put them all in one big country when they're clearly, this group wants to be in this region, this group wants to be in, and now we come to Ukraine and the Ukraine and Russia situation, where you've got the eastern part of Ukraine where Russia's going, this is ethnically Russian. These are our people. They want to be with us. They don't want to be with you. And then you've got those people saying, it's true. We want to be with Russia, but Ukraine's saying, well, you're part of us. And so it becomes like, who is drawing the maps? Those people, are they ignorant, or are they setting up future conflicts by intentionally drawing lines in a way that they know will create tension?
Yeah. And it was Winston Churchill that drew those lines. By,
oh, was it?
Yeah. After World War One. You're right. Artificial. And again, the reason, and we've had the 20th century prove this, an artificial nation would be like the Soviet Union, completely artificial. I mean, just a top-down totalitarian state, you know, that runs this massive empire, especially after World War II, of people that are multi-ethnic, multiracial, multilingual, all over the place. As soon as that power falters at the top, it breaks apart naturally, right? It can't be held together. You know, when you hear, diversity is our strength, and that's something here, Tucker Carlson's book, Ship of Fools, he's like, it's a mantra you have to repeat, you know, over and over again. It's like, I just think of somebody rocking back and forth, just thinking, oh, it's diversity. Well, it's not, though. I'm just sorry. I mean, it's nations that have a cohesive culture of some kind. And again, this isn't a racial statement. This is just culture, right? So, Japan in 50 years will be Japan. Mexico will be Mexico. China will be China for sure. What will we be? You know, like this country, land that I love, what have we done? We're modeling by design. You know, they want to make the term population replacement illegal now. just make not something so it. Self-evident.
Don't fix it. Just make the term illegal.
Right. Just, you're crazy for believing the things that we told you we were going to do. I mean, Joe Biden ran on, and I remember covering this on my radio show when I was on air in San Antonio. I'm going, is anybody else watching this? Like Joe Biden saying that, you know, well, it's a good thing. We get that number of people that are from European descent under 50%. He's like, that's great. We got to celebrate that loss of population. Who does that? That's never in the history of ever in any country celebrating the loss of the native population or whatever the Eurocentric, whatever you want to call it, that base of people like celebrating their decline. Like any decline would be weird, but that's what they do. Yeah. Now, they tell us like, we're going to replace your votes. We're going to replace your population. They say that. And so again, this is something that's happening to us. And, you look at the phenomenon of ethno-nationalism is decentralization, and the elites want centralization. One of the ways they're trying to get that through a creative destruction, they're trying to erase the United States. One of the ways we started to be bankrupted in the late 60s, early 70s. You can look at the timeline, Charlie. The last time this country ran a trade surplus was 1974. Wow. I was just reading something recently. Always interested in the history of around the Nixon administration. And I was reading something recently. Roger Stone was talking about how Nixon was standing up to the CIA because he knew that they knew what had happened in Dallas. And I don't know if they tried to, Richard Nixon was in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. He was closing a deal for Studebaker. Did you know that? Like,
no.
They tried to get him in the same vicinity. It was really weird. Like, there's so many weird things with that. But he knew that they had something in it. And that, you find the 18 and a half minute gap. He's the only guy to ever resign. And again, opened China, took us off the gold standard. I'm not defending him, but I'm just saying it's interesting that he's one of the people they got rid of, right? And one of the things he freaked out on was the trade deficit. He said, well, this can't happen. Like, he started trying to fix that immediately. Well, they got rid of him. And again, we never ran a trade surplus again. We've only run trade deficits. And the transfer of wealth prior to COVID-1984, that transfer of wealth, I used to talk about it, the greatest transfer of wealth in the history of man. It was until 2020.
Yeah.
That's a totally, it eclipsed, 2020 and 2021 eclipsed everything that we did in trade from 1974 on. And that was trillions transferred to the Chinese. So again, I don't know what to make of, because the 9/11 doesn't fit in our turning.
Mm-mm.
Right? It has if it was truly was like history was happening, then we'd still be fighting that thing, or we'd still be, or there would have been some kind of closure. It was nothing. It's like it went out with a whimper, not a bang, for a reason, because it wasn't real.
Yeah. Yeah. So that implies that there is an event coming, right? That is real, or theoretically that could justify this. Can't be COVID, right? Because COVID is too fake. It's got to be the, I guess we're speculating here, but and again, the green agenda seems fake too. But I just wonder if it's just fiat currencies in and of themselves have just lost their luster after hyperinflation, after how many Venezuelas do you have to have? How many, the last stable currencies, the US dollar, and then you take a look at it and you go, really? It's that stable? We owe $30 trillion in debt. And the Fed creates this out of thin air, and now they're raising interest rates. And now we have to worry about stagflation. And is this system really the best? We've got all these smart people, and the best system we can come up with is a central banking system. What if the fourth turning is the elimination or the realization that central banking and fiat currencies is the end of you know, civilization? If we keep going, there maybe it just collapses under the weight of its own stupidity. I hope. Yeah,
that seems to be the course that we're on. It's interesting because every central bank around the world is ordering gold. They're breaking all the records. As a matter of fact, I covered this on my show. There was a 300-ton order of gold a few months ago, and it was supposedly anonymous. Nobody knew who it was. It's the Chinese. There was another 30 tons ordered. It was the Chinese. I mean, we have sanctions. I looked this up too, Charlie. It's baffling. We have sanctions on 36 different countries. We have economic, I was trying to think, how many do we have? So, you know, Iran comes to mind, Venezuela, Cuba, perhaps, or, you know, Russia for sure. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking, how many are, there's 36.
Wow.
And so the dollar is weaponized. These countries, the BRICS nations, again, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they've come together. They're 40% of the population of the earth. We're 5%. And we've had this hegemonic dominance since the end of World War II and you know, the meeting in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire in 1944. We dominated. Well, you know, we've had a lot of hubristic leaders. We've kicked people around. We've bullied. Again, we have not kept our word. All the things that are recipes for decline and fall. Now, I hope this, you know, the Soviet Union just went away. You know, and so I was talking about the America, like I love the United States of America. I love my country. I love the Republic, but there's two different, there's the Republic and the Empire. The Empire needs to go. Yes. You know, the 700 bases and 132, we got to go. It's not made us safer, more prosperous, or any of those things. Well, the Pentagon, you know, if you want to look at the future, the Pentagon a couple of years ago was running us a war simulation on a Bitcoin revolt by Gen Zers. This is the Pentagon.
Like,
so yeah, you can look that up. They're running a Bitcoin revolt simulation. What happens if all these Gen Zers go Bitcoin? Because the petrodollar is, again, the fuel for the empire and vice versa. That's what they need, each other. It's symbiotic.
Yeah.
That's coming to an end. I mean, this latest, and God forbid, I mean, this latest clash in Russia, you know, with Ukraine and us pushing, you know, for NATO entry and all this stuff that means war. You know, this is us showing, I think, the twilight of the American dollar and twilight of the empire, just trying all that we can with sanctions. It didn't do anything. The Russian ruble's better off now because they said, we don't take dollars anymore. The actual statement was, they're candy wrappers to us.
Yeah.
And in Russian, that really means like just trash. It's not even funny. Like, we don't want that. Get it away. Like, it's like an insult to give somebody like an old candy wrapper, I guess, in Russia. I looked it up.
Huh.
So they started going and looking at other ways, like gold. They even considered Bitcoin. But the, you know, the Chinese, the Russians getting together, again, the BRICS nations, and creating a basket of commodities, because even our commodities are rigged. Like, even our gold markets are rigged. Our silver markets are rigged. So they know that too. They don't like anything that we have done. So China buying that 30 tons of gold really has to do with Taiwan. So you're looking at a shift there. Like, as soon as they're ready, they're going to take Taiwan. And by the way, we told them they could, for the most part. I mean, Nixon and Kissinger in 72 told that to Mao. 79, Jimmy Carter with Zygmunt Brzezinski put that in writing, that one China policy. This has been baked into it for a long time, which is even more confusing, you know, that we're somehow standing up to. We're so schizophrenic and all over the place with our leadership. That's what worries me. But yeah, the world's about to change. And again, I don't welcome it. I don't know what that means for every, I don't, again, people ask me, was gold and silver going to go up? I'm like, I don't know, but I know where the dollar's going. I know where the petrodollar is headed. And again, the news today on Zero Hedge before we did this recording, Saudis at the World Economic Forum and all the Davos, they're in talks right now.
Yeah. For Petro Yuan, OPEC Plus, talking about settling trade arrangements in something other than dollars.
Yeah.
That is the death of the petrodollar. And the death of the petrodollar has a cascading effect that impacts all kinds of things. When those dollars are no longer needed in foreign countries to use to buy oil, because that's the arrangement. Well, if we don't need these candy wrappers anymore, let's send them back to where they came from. And they come flooding back to America in the form of higher inflation and hyperinflation and a collapse of America, just exactly how the globalists want it. Right, with us broken. Why, you don't need to start a hot war when you're to invade a country that's bordered on two sides by massive oceans. Just destroy them from the inside with their currency. Isn't that what Soros did with the British pound? Didn't he destroy that? Weren't his whole team working on Russia from the inside, trying to hollow them out by destroying their currency? I mean, it seems like you get everybody hooked on this. US dollar opium, and then you cut off their supply and watch them fall apart. And maybe that's the fourth turning, is that we pivot to not just Asia as the manufacturing hub. I'd suggest that's been going on for three decades, but Asia as the market hub. In fact, Dmitry Medvedev, in his totally based and insane New Year's Eve tweets, said that he envisioned the marketplaces physically moving to Asia from the West, from New York City, the stock exchanges, I'm assuming he meant the London, maybe the London Interbanking Office and LIBOR and all of those COMEX and whatever, all moving east to Asia. That would definitely qualify as a fourth turning, wouldn't you say? Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Lyndon Johnson said that power is where power goes. I mean, everybody can feel the transition there. I mean, you can feel the oxygen getting sucked out of the room when you're talking about the future's not in the U.S. It should have been.
It should have been.
Like, you know, this fourth turning, I think it was Oscar Wilde who said that America was the only country in history that went from barbarism to decadence with no civilization in between. We really, you know, and again, we really didn't have, it'll be the only country in history that was artificially declined. Like, everybody has a beginning and an end. Like, that's just history. You know, there's always a rise and fall, but everything was accelerated. So like right now, the challenge should be in a post-World War II environment. Like, we should be, you know, again, we should be in a trade rivalry with China and some, like the East. There should be East-West conflicts and trade and currency and other things like that. But we skipped it. We skipped all of that leading up to here, which is, again, that's why I think about history in this, and cyclically, and 9/11 is like an anomaly, because we shouldn't have been, and that shouldn't have been a thing, but we just kind of paid attention to that all the while, all the wealth, the technology, everything being siphoned off, even our politics being redirected from. Yeah. And I'm not one of these fake right wingers who's like, it's the Chinese fault. They released the virus. I'm like, no, I know what the history of China is. I know that they were set up by the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds. I know what they are now, but they're not the boogeyman. It's our own, like, the calls are coming from inside the house, right? we're being brought down from the inside. I know that. I'm not trying to misdirect, but yeah, yeah. I think the reality, it's going to be swift too. It's going to be, just like, you know, the Soviet Union collapsed between two Christmases, 1979, yeah, which is when I was born, and that's the day they invaded Afghanistan was the day I was born, and then the day that they collapsed, which was 1991. So again, 11 years apart, Charlie, and they collapsed into 16 pieces, and nobody thought in 1980 that the Soviet Union was going to go away. They're just gone, and I think that will happen to the American empire and the dollar. That's why people need to fight their normalcy bias. The financial networks, I'll give you an example of how serious this is. Jamie Dimon, or Demon, from JP Morgan Chase, head of the largest bank in the U.S. When have you ever heard anybody saying, oh, there's going to be an economic superstorm? From a banker? From the head of the largest bank in the U.S. telling depositors that there's going to be an economic superstorm? You have the IMF, the Bank of International Settlements. They're all saying that there's going to be recession and that rising interest rates and all this stuff. It also, first time in 33 years, Charlie, the money supply went negative.
Why is that?
From the Mises Institute. They're pulling. The thing is, the elites, in my opinion, the people that run our currency, they realize that if they lose reserve currency status, they lost everything. Mm-hmm. So they are pulling back to stop inflation. Like I know it's tiny little moves because we look at like the 1970s, Paul Volcker raised interest rates to the teens, but he did it over 5 years. These last interest rates hikes were the fastest in history. It's the most consecutive in a row that we've ever, I know it's like, 50 basis points is like, half a point or whatever, but they raise them faster. So my prediction is that they will do everything to keep the reserve currency status. The economy is secondary. So when you have people like Michael Burry, saying that he's from The Big Short fame, smart guy, but he's saying they're going to do QE again. I'm like, I don't think that they will. I don't think that they're going to bail out Wall Street or anything. I think they've already picked the winners and losers. They're going to let the chips fall where they may. They're going to protect the dollar's currency status at all costs. And that may mean war. All else, and Gerald Celente says this, when all else fails, they take you to war. And that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, the Thucydides trap also says that as well, right? That of 12 of the last 16 times in which a rising superpower has challenged the existing superpower, 75% of the time it ends in war. And this is where we are with the China threatening America's dominance. Now, if we were a sane and rationally run country, you might say, well, perhaps we could avoid it this time. But there's nothing in this administration or the previous one or the ones before that or over the last 50 years that leads me to believe that America would do anything to try and get out of the way of another war. In fact, my assumption is that we would find some way to start it. Sure. So I worry about that as well as this threat as America feels it's threatened. But then I pivot back. You talked about, the decision has been made to sort of give up on America. And I've heard Catherine Austin Fitz talk about this on multiple occasions, about how she was in a meeting in 1997 when she was the assistant director of HUD. And she said that she's sitting in these meetings and the guys are saying, well, we've made the decision to pivot to Asia. We're out of a United States. And she's like, what does this mean? We're not putting any more money. They said, we're not putting any more money into this. It's a beater car. We're not going to change the oil on it. We're moving on to something else. So she said she was in those meetings where the decision's been made. And then you look back and you go, okay, based on 25 years after that meeting, have you seen anything that would lead you to believe that she was wrong? I look around and I go, no. Seems like the decision has been made to sort of pull the plug on this. And that's scary to me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at our history. The Empire State Building was built at the height of the Great Depression, 1933. Are we building buildings today? Are we doing any? I mean, we came back from depression, war. And, again, in the 1950s, Charlie, we were 50% of the world's population, 5% of the world's population had 50% of the wealth.
Wow.
And think of how that's dissipated. We just turned our backs on everything that the founding fathers of the United States gave us, which was a sound dollar, a bimetallic dollar. The second act out of Congress in 1789 was the Tariff Act. So all four presidents on Mount Rushmore believed in tariffs. Every single figure on our paper currency believed in, not a free trader in there. There's no, all the paper currency figures, all people that believed in tariffs. Again, I'm not just advocating tariffs. I'm saying that we had a different economic system, which was economic nationalism and sound money. That's what builds great countries. That's what made us the manufacturing marvel of mankind. We were the arsenal democracy, if you want to. I don't like that word. Not arsenal democracy. I don't like that word at all. But we were. And you have to ask yourself, how did that change so quickly? And it's by design. And it wasn't just stupid decisions. It's like, Gary Allen said that if they were just stupid, they blunder in our favor occasionally. They don't. You know, so you've watched, you again, why do we have so many financial products now? This wasn't part of our history. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with them, but it's way they, the elites know that, you know, if you catch on to the fact that they've devalued your dollar, if you catch on to that scam, because like, again, an American in 1901 is going to, if they want to go buy a pair of clothes or shoes or food or anything, they're going to pay exactly what the person in George Washington's presidency days in 1790s would pay. There was no inflation. That's 100 plus years.
That's zero. Amazing. That's the way it should be. It's crazy for us to think that because we've grown up in a world of inflation and we know, well, you know, back in my day, I used to go to a movie for a nickel and you hear all these stories and you go, wow. And now I look back and I go, well, back in my day, I used to go to a movie for $4. And now I go, God damn, now I sound like my grandpa, you know?
Right. All these, I mean, we got generations who've grown up with inflation. And it's like, oh, wow, my house is worth more. No, your dollar's worth less. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, but sometimes there's housing booms and it really is a real estate gold mine or something, but that's rare. You know that you're in the real estate business. Yeah. So it's just inflation. You know, and again, like, oh, well, is gold going up? I don't know. I know where the dollar's going though. You know, it's like the same thing with silver. People always ask me all the time, was it going, where is it going? It may not matter, you know, and like you said earlier, or you saying like $2,500 silver, something crazy. Like, my co-host of the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show, Kinsey, and she's the top trader here in the company now. She's like, if silver ever hits 5,000 or something, you can't go outside because it's going to be like the end of time. Like, and like, that's our joke. It's like at a certain number, it's not good for anybody. It doesn't really matter. And, and you're thinking with normalcy bias, like the dollar has retained its value, but, or whatever that is. I mean, it's by decree, but again, that ends with the Bretton Woods system. I think we're having Bretton Woods 3 now. Bretton Woods 2 obviously was Nixon taking the dollar off the gold standards. I think Bretton Woods is going on without us being in it. I don't think we're involved in it. I think the other countries are getting together and saying, close to 40 different countries being sanctioned, all these different, I mean, the weaponization of the dollar. You guys look crazy. You guys look, I mean, by design, we look schizophrenic. I mean, I'll pivot back to this. 2016, you had Hillary Clinton in presidential elections saying that, we're going to shoot down Russian aircraft trying to bomb Al-Qaeda in Syria. And then again, that's who our mortal enemy is supposed to be, Charlie. We're supposed to be. Right. They brought down our towers. And we're gonna risk a nuclear war so that the Russians won't be able to kill the people that we're supposedly enemies with. That's how insane we look, right, to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's not a good look. It's by design. Well, let's wrap it up with this. We're in a place where we've got theoretically a little bit of time. Maybe not much, but we've got a little bit of time to get our house in order and get ourselves figured out. I'm curious to know what's the move. And I know everybody's different and everybody's in different scenarios here. But if you're listening to this and you're going, well, these guys are making a lot of sense. I don't want this to happen. I'm not wishing for this. It's out of our hands, whether or not we want this to happen or wish for it. Doesn't matter. What's coming seems to be coming, but how can we move ourselves out of the way so that we don't take the brunt of this? I know a lot of people are going to get hurt and I don't want that and I don't wish that, but change is hard. Sometimes change is for the better. Maybe this is America's payback for being such psychopathic, bloodthirsty maniacs around the globe, but I think you're right. I think it looks like moves are being made to exclude America from some of these decisions that we had always been not only involved in, but hell, we'd been the decision makers of it. And now things are moving on without us and we're going to have a lot of change. How do we deal with this?
Well, I think first and foremost, there's a lot of heavy pressing events ahead. We're going to have to deal with those, but there's also opportunity. Like, this is a great time for you to evaluate where you stand financially, start your own business. I don't care how small it is. Matter of fact, you know, Charlie's talking about Legal Shield, you know, don't get pushed around.com. You can go to that and find out. You can start your own business. You can become an associate. You can have that. And then you get all the benefits, the tax benefits of having your own business. It's a tiny amount for an investment. And all of a sudden you're ready to help other people understand that information. That's one way that you can do it. Getting involved in your community, with outreach and stuff like that when it comes to people that are of like mind. It doesn't have to be like where you live geographically, but sharing information, especially like supporting hosts like Charlie, people that are doing research, trying to bring you the best possible information that they can. Because again, the hairdos and the Operation Mockingbird, you know, recipients, they're going to get propped up and paid no matter what, rain or shine, to bring you propaganda. People like us in alternative media, we have to research. We have to show up. We have to, a lot of times, pay our own way to get here so that, you know, you can support people in alternative media and get the best information that you can. But realize that normalcy bias is going to get us all in trouble. If you think that the future is going to be like the past, you've already lost. And this is, folks, I'm talking to myself when I'm doing this. So I'm being as open with you as I can. I'm talking to myself. So looking at these threats, you know, look, Charlie has storable food. Yeah. You know, just get that. Get some storable food and put that out of your mind. You know, what you can afford. You know, have a, if you got a little bit of land, grow something. You know, that's one way you can do it. But just supporting causes that support freedom, you know, work on yourself. But again, I think there's going to be opportunity in the chaos to really grow. We're not going to have the same experience that we've had previous. Let's just put it that way. And, you know, a lot of fortunes are made in these times. A lot of history shows us that. But do you have the character? I once heard about, and I'll close with this. I once heard about this speaker was talking about the wealthiest men in the world in the late 20s all got together, and they're going to shape how the 1930s were going to go. And, you know, I forget who the other characters were, but again, you'd know the familiar names, all the, you know, banking magnates and people of the 1920s. And he starts reading off the list. What happened to those guys in the 30s? And they most all were either dead in prison or shamed or broke, you know? And he's like, look, they didn't have the character to deal with the loss of their reality. They weren't able to cope. Some people did. Some people made great fortunes. Some people adapted to the Great Depression. Some people thrived. So that's, you want to be on the side of who's thriving. One of the ways you can do that is information. And the other way is adapting. And again, I think that's just looking to what you can do, what services you can offer, and being prepared for those next steps. So that's my best advice.
Well, I think it's great advice. And it reminds me of that Chinese character that stands for danger as well as opportunity, right? Is that there's a Chinese character.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
So it's both dangerous and a time of opportunity. So if you're not afraid, look, we're going to have to go through this. You might as well come up with some ideas on how to move yourself, move your family out of the way, stick together. We're going to need it. Support. Yeah. Go out and find the best, most authentic, correct information you can get your hands on and support that. Speaking of that, where can people find your amazing information and support your work?
You can go to arterburn.news. That's my personal website. I'm always working to try to improve. I've told people for months, I got a new article I'm going to put out, and then I haven't finished it. But you can go to arterburn.news. It has all my shows up there, linked to the RSS feed for and paratruthers there. I do, you know, I need to have you on, by the way. We're going to do a paratruther soon.
Cool.
Kind of a play on words for paratrooper. But Arterburn radio transmission and links to other things, you know, like my business and, of course, Wise Wolf Gold and Silver. But the best way to find that is macroaggressions.gold. You can get in touch with me.
Awesome. You're the best. And I'm serious when I say you might be the most interesting person I know. You've done a lot. You've read a lot. You know a lot. But you also know that there's more to know. And that's what we love about you. That's Tony Arterburn, everybody. Support his work. If you're interested, share this episode with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression or through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.